Food sovereignty is basically, I mean, there's the definition which Via Campesina, which is an international peasant federation, gives food sovereignty, which is people's right to healthy and culturally appropriate food produced through ecologically and sound and sustainable methods, and the right to define their own food and agriculture systems. I think the essence of food sovereignty is the democratization of our food system, where we get to decide about our food system, rather than a handful of monopolies.
That's Eric Holt Jimenez, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Eric Holt Jimenez on food sovereignty. Food is the weak link that brought down earlier civilizations, says author Lester Brown, and it could bring our own civilization down if we continue with business as usual. We are entering a new food era, one marked by higher prices, growing numbers of hungry people, and an intensifying competition for land and water. A record number of Americans are living on food stamps. Among the factors responsible for the crisis are the policies of a handful of transnational agri-food monopolies and the use of grain to produce fuel for cars. World prices of wheat, rice, corn, and soybeans have roughly tripled, reaching historic highs. What are the alternatives? Local communities and international social movements are promoting sustainable agriculture and food sovereignty. To talk about these issues is Eric Holt Jimenez. He's the executive director of Food First and the author of Campesino a Campesino, Voices from Latin America's Farmer-to-Farmer Movement, and co-author with Raj Patel of Food Rebellions. Eric Holt Jimenez spoke in Seattle.
First, just a quick news update. One came from the USDA, and the other was a declaration from the World Food Summit in Rome. And the USDA reported that in 2008, the number of hungry people in the United States had increased from 38 million to almost 50 million people. Now, they don't use the word hunger at the USDA. That was purged from the lexicon about 4 years ago. If you want to get a grant from the USDA, you cannot say it's to combat hunger. You have to say it's to combat food insecurity. Now, there is an important distinction here, and we'll get to that in a moment. But in fact, what's happening is that the level of food insecurity in the United States is now quickly approaching the levels of food insecurity and hunger worldwide. So in the richest, most productive country in the world, we're seeing levels of hunger which reflect the global hunger that we see on the planet. So we have 17 million families who are now food insecure in the U.S. That's up from 13 million just last year. What's not mentioned in the USDA report is that, in fact, these are working families. Most of the people who are going hungry in the United States are working people. So what does that tell you? That means that they're too poor to buy the food which is available. We've got plenty of food here. Why are they hungry? When they're working. Right. It also doesn't mention the fact that in the United States, the way poverty, the way hunger manifests itself, right, is in malnutrition and in the epidemic of diet-related diseases that we have in this country. Heart disease, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, obesity. These are epidemics in this country because poor people can't afford to buy good food. So they've got to buy the lousy, cheap, processed food that the industry puts out and which is making us sick. So the costs, the tremendous health costs which are associated with hunger are not mentioned in the USDA report. They're massive. The World Food Summit was extremely disappointing this year. First of all, none of the G8 leaders could be bothered to show up, including President Obama, who declared that food and hunger were a priority and agriculture was a priority. He couldn't make it. But then neither could anybody else. The only president that showed up at the food summit in Rome was Berlusconi. Well, he lives there, so he really didn't have a choice. But what it shows that is, in fact, that the developed world, the rich countries, are backing away from their commitments to end hunger. And the first thing that we saw at the Food Summit was they decided to drop the Millennium Development Goal of ending hunger by 2025. Now they're just going to have hunger, not have it, cut it in half by 2015. There were no new commitments in terms of the money that we know that we need in order to end hunger. It's about $40 billion a year, a fraction of what was given to Wall Street for the bailouts. And a fraction of what both Europe and the United States gives to industrial agriculture in the form of taxpayer subsidies. So there are no new concrete financial commitments coming out of the North to deal with hunger. And yet, we now have a billion people going hungry on the planet, thanks to the food crisis of this last year. Now, we all heard about the food crisis because last year we heard about all these food riots around the world. And that's how they were presented. Riots of starving, crazed, hungry people with empty stomachs and clenched fists chasing after food. And there was shortages of food around the world. And we needed to produce more, right, to deal with this terrible problem of hunger, which had just appeared overnight. Where did all these... There were over 40 riots around the world. Where did they come from? Well, if you look a little closer into the situation, in fact, you find that on one hand, we were producing more than 1.5 times enough food for every man, woman, and child on the planet. So there really wasn't a lack of food. What happened was you had food price inflation. People are hungry not because of a lack of food. People are hungry because they're poor and they can't afford to buy the food which is available. And food prices had shot up. And we'll get to why in just a second. But what had happened was that governments were unable to deal with this contradiction of the food being there and people not being able to afford it. And people were going hungry. So what did people do? They didn't storm the warehouses. They stormed the National Palace. They kicked their leaders out of office. In Haiti, they drove the prime minister off the island because he'd failed the population. These were not food riots. These were rebellions against an unjust food system, which is not providing for its people. What added insult to injury last year is that we had record levels of hunger at the same time that we had record harvests. The world had never produced as much food in its history as it produced last year. We also had record profits on the part of the monopolies which control our global food system. So Archer Daniels Midlands, Cargill, Monsanto, Tesco, Walmart, from farm to fork, those that control our food system were raking in record profits at the end of 2007. To give you an idea, quarterly profits for Cargill were up 86%, ADM up 20%, Monsanto up 45%, General Foods up 61%. Mosaic Fertilizer, which is an arm of Cargill, saw an increase in quarterly profits at the end of last year of 1,200% at the height of the food crisis. And when the spokesperson for Monsanto was asked about this contradiction of overproduction on one hand, massive hunger on the other, and windfall profits, she said, "Don't ask us about all these profits. Ask us what we do with the profits." Some farmers have an idea of what they can do with the profits. Now, you heard a lot in the news, in the mainstream media, about the proximate causes of the food crisis. That there were droughts in Australia and that the wheat crop failed in 2006. Well, that's true. That, in fact, there had been a 5% drop in cereal production in 2006. Well, that's true, too. That we had low grain reserves worldwide, less than 50 days of grain reserves. That's true. But then we have to ask, why are our grain reserves so low if we're overproducing food? And then, of course, agri-fuels. which many people call biofuels. We call them agrofuels, and I'm not talking about, you know, recycled kitchen grease here. I'm talking about industrial plantations, monoculture plantations of hundreds and thousands of acres of cane, palm, and corn, right? Where in which food crop land dedicated to food crops is transferred to fuel crops. It's industrial ethanol production and biodiesel production. Well, because of our energy targets, renewable energy targets, in our own legislation, in our energy bill, we are now all forced to consume a certain amount of ethanol. This presented a captive market. So investors began to invest in the expansion of agrofuels. And the big investors, the big boys, got into the game. And so pretty soon, all this land was going into agrofuels and out of food production. And not just out of corn production, out of wheat production, out of rice production, out of all kinds of production. So the price of grains began to rise. And then Wall Street said, oh, isn't that interesting? We just happen to have a tremendous amount of money in our hands after the housing bubble. What shall we do? Well, they decided to invest in food commodities. And they pumped the price up of food. And that's when we got food price inflation. And then you had companies like Archer Daniels Midlands hoarding food, keeping grain off the market in order for the price of corn to go up. And so the Mexicans would have to pay five times their normal price for their tortillas, and you get the tortilla crisis. Until you get a crisis of governance in Mexico, and finally Cargill decides to let some of the grain out of their own reserves. So that's really what sparked food price inflation, and the media talked about this. But the root causes of the hunger crisis were patently avoided. And the main cause of hunger now and for the last half century has basically been that we have a vulnerable food system, which is increasingly dominated by just a handful of crops, five crops, in the hands of a handful of corporations who are monopolies and monopsonies. And it's created a highly volatile system which is very vulnerable to both economic and environmental shock. And the system is basically run by the industrial agri-foods complex. And the industrial agri-foods complex is made up of the large grain processors, the seed and genetic engineering companies like Monsanto, Syngenta, and the large retailers and distributors. These are the ones that control our food from farm to fork, as I said before. Well, where did this come from? This didn't just happen overnight. It just didn't happen in 2007 and provoke a crisis. You have to go back to the Green Revolution starting in the 1960s, which really went through the 1980s, in which the industrial model of food production from the global north was exported to the global south. And this was with the help of tax dollars. These were with the help of all the agricultural research institutes, which are funded by tax dollars, that went out to centers of agrobiodiversity, of genetic diversity around the world, and collected seed from the peasants, and then churned out some hybrids, high-yielding hybrids, high-yielding varieties, HYVs. Now, actually, these high-yielding varieties were high-consuming varieties because they produced double that local varieties might produce because they were grown closer together. They invested less energy in the stalk and more in the panicle or more in the cob or where. And they required large amounts of fertilizer, large amounts of water, and eventually larger and larger and larger amounts of pesticide. Well, who could afford these varieties? Certainly not poor peasants. They had no access to credit, had no collateral to put up in order to get credit, in order to buy these varieties. So it was the larger farmers and the richer farmers who in the first instance benefited from the Green Revolution all around the world. Well, what happened to the smaller farmers? They were slowly pushed off the bottom land, pushed off the good agricultural land, which was dedicated more and more to the Green Revolution and to the larger farmers, and pushed out onto the fragile hillsides and into the forest perimeters of the rainforest in search of nutrients for subsistence agriculture. So there was an immediate flush of grains around the world, both because of the intensity of industrial production, but also because of the extension of the area farmed, being farmed by the peasantry. But the Green Revolution took credit for all of that, and I guess in a way it should. However, what happened was that very quickly on the hillsides and in the forest perimeters, the soils washed away, the nutrients volatilized, they lost the organic material, and peasants began to go hungry. They fled to the cities and they fled across borders searching for work. And so it turns out that the Green Revolution actually produced as many hungry people as they say they saved from hunger. Per capita production went up by 11% over the period of the Green Revolution, the heyday of the Green Revolution, 60s and 70s. That means that for every person on Earth, we should have had 11% more food. Because it's per capita. The number of hungry people also went up by 11%. So what does that mean? That means that some people are not getting the food. And it was the poor who were not getting the food. And who were joining the ranks of the poor? The farmers, the peasants, who were being forced off their land, forced onto postage stamp sizes of land where they could not possibly provide for their families. They were the ones going hungry, because they were the ones who had been made poor by the Green Revolution.